So, please join me in welcoming to the stage Dr. Claude Bouchard.
It's all yours.
Thank you, Dr. Lightfoot, ladies and gentlemen. We are all constantly reminded that being sedentary, exercising very little, or having a poor fitness is bad for us. Bad in terms of just about every health outcome we can think of, and bad also in terms of lifespan. So in this talk, I'm going to examine that question, whether it is the sedentary behavior or the exercise or the fitness that is the most important in driving the relationship to health and disease. This space of sedentary behavior to activity to fitness is a complex domain. And for the purpose of this presentation, I will only talk about two types of traits. First, behavior, ranging from on the continuum of sedentary to exercise training behavior, we'll take the extremes. And then a state or an attribute, which is fitness. And here I will not deal with the complexity of fitness because it is a quite a large domain in itself, but I will only talk about cardiorespiratory fitness, or CRF, where most of the evidence is available today. And I will, for the sake of time, I will maintain the emphasis on mortality, the most, of course, the most critical health outcome, and the one for which it happens we have the largest amount of evidence. This is an area that I have addressed with my colleagues Steve Blair and Peter Kaczmarczyk in a paper that was published about 2 months ago in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. I'm not going to be able to cover everything we have described in that paper, but if you want to know more about it, the evidence is summarized in the publication. Let's begin with sedentary behavior. There is a recent meta-analysis that can inform our propos of today. The meta-analysis was conducted with six studies encompassing almost 600,000 adults. The follow-ups in each of the study ranged from 3 to 8 years, and there were more than 29,000 deaths in total. One major finding was that there was a 35 higher mortality rate for adults sitting at least 10 hours per day, even after there was adjustment for physical activity level. So a pretty powerful effect. Then if we put now physical activity level in the picture, we have been working on this question for a long time. In 1986, so 30 years ago, Ralph Paffenbarger used the data from the Harvard alumni study and established this relationship. It was based on about 16,000 men with a follow-up that extended up to 16 years. 30 years later, in a meta-analysis which included 40 times the sample size that Paffenbarger had, we see the same curve, the same effect size, a reduction in the risk of mortality of about 40% with a growing amount of physical activity. So this appears to be a real phenomenon that is repeated over and over again in all countries of the Western world where it has been investigated. And then we have cardiorespiratory fitness. Another recent meta-analysis, we're fortunate to have one here, based on 33 studies in which there were more than 100,000 participants with a follow-up period ranging from 1 to 26 years and a total of 6,900 deaths available. The major conclusion, again, was that for each 1 meth increment in CRF, all-cause mortality was reduced by 13% on average. So all three seem to have pretty strong effect on the ultimate health outcome, that is a prevention of premature death. When we plot the general trends of all of these studies together, superimposed on the same graph, beginning with sitting, we have the typical pattern that we described before, with a reduction of about 35% at when the sitting is much lower, with moderate to vigorous physical activity. We recovered a curve that was shown initially by Paffenbarger. There seemed to be a tendency for physical activity level to have a stronger effect in the at the low end of the engagement in physical activity, but that's probably going to be shown to be an artifact eventually when it's based on millions of subjects. And then we have the fitness curve. All three seem to be attaining about the same level of risk reduction, about 40% of the for the risk of mortality from all causes or from cardiovascular disease as well. Now, these curves are not totally independent of one another, because in some studies they were not controlling for the other two. There are very few studies actually where, for example, in the study of sitting versus health, where the both the activity level and CRF was controlled for, and vice versa with the other traits. So, but in some they were, and when they were, the effect persisted despite the adjustment for the other behavior. So we seem to be in the presence of independent effects by and large. So the question I asked was, is it less sitting? Is it more exercise, or is it higher fitness? I think we can now conclude that each trait seemed to exert independent effects on mortality, but they are also joint effect as well. So for maximum benefits, we should answer the question by saying it is less sitting and more exercise and higher fitness, which is more likely to generate full health benefits. Now, there's an important issue. Since CRF is one of the most powerful determinants of health and longevity, we need to consider the distinction between intrinsic CRF and acquired CRF. The intrinsic CRF is the one that we have when we are sedentary, completely inactive, never exposed to exercise. That's our given level of cardiorespiratory fitness. The acquired CRF is the one that we achieve as a result of exposure, regular exposure to exercise. Some important facts about this. First, the intrinsic CRF is highly variable. Even when we try to make a group very clear and clean, for example, a given age range, a given body mass, and within one gender and or one ethnicity, or even then, the CRF remains highly variable. And about half of the variance, 50%, appears to be compatible with the presence of a genetic transmission. Here we have, for to illustrate my point of variation, here we have the distribution of the maximal oxygen uptake as a surrogate for CRF in 174 young adults, males, totally sedentary in the heritage family study prior to the beginning of the research. And the mean maximal oxygen uptake is 41, the standard deviation is 8, and we have pretty much a normal distribution, which says that you have people who naturally have maximal oxygen uptake of around 25, 30, and others around 50, 55. So there's almost a 100% difference between the low and the high values in people who are sedentary. Then we have the trainability. It is trainable, but the response is highly variable. And here again, there's a genetic component, and it is of the order of 45%. Here is how it looks in the same subjects. The same program, they were exposed to the same program, the same exercise prescription. The mean gain was 16%, but the standard deviation is 9%. Look at the skewness. There are people who can improve dramatically, increasing by their CRF by 40, 50, 60%, while a vast majority are in the 5, 10, 15, 20% range. Finally, very important observation, there is no correlation between the two. No correlation between intrinsic CRF and CRF trainability. 0.08 in the Heritage Family Study, based on 470 subjects. So this suggests that there are different biological pathways and different systems that are driving, that are regulating both traits. One important question is whether intrinsic CRF is a stronger predictor of health and longevity than acquired CRF. This has never been addressed in people. Fortunately, there is a very nice series of experiments done with rats in the laboratory of Steve Britton, Lauren Koch at the University of Michigan, where they are breeding an outbred rat, and they've been doing this for a long time, breeding for low capacity, low fitness, and high fitness. And they are now, I think, up to 35 generations. Here we have a generation 14. The difference between the low capacity, low fitness, LCR, versus the high capacity, HCR, longevity. And as you can see here, there's a 12-month difference. The high capacity runner rats who are sedentary. These rats are totally sedentary. The only thing we have here is the intrinsic fitness level. The high fit, intrinsically high fit rats live 12 months longer than the low fit one. We have no equivalent in people. So this is an area where we need to do a lot of research, because in our CRF studies in humans on health outcomes, we have a mixture of people who are active and inactive. It's a mixture of intrinsic and acquired CRF. So we have never distinguished between the two in human studies thus far. The fact that CRF is important creates a problem for us. In the past, exercise guidelines aimed at increasing CRF. But since 1995, we have shifted the emphasis to diminish the intensity of physical activity in order to increase participation. It has worked rather well, but moderate physical activity is, on the other hand, less likely to increase CRF. So we are in a conundrum, and this has not been resolved thus far. Three agenda items I will leave you with. First, we need to clarify the independent and joint contributions of sedentary behavior, exercise, and CRF on health and longevity more than we have done thus far, even though there is already good evidence, but it needs to be done in more depth. Second, we need to clarify the respective contributions of intrinsic and acquired CRF on health and longevity in people. And finally, we need to investigate how to improve CRF in a public health context, not in a performance context, but in the public health context, to optimize benefits on health and longevity. My final word is that, yes, the question can be fully answered with a high degree of confidence that it is less sitting, more exercise, and higher cardiorespiratory fitness which should be guiding our actions in public health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bouchard. We have a couple questions for you. First question we have is from Rob C. in the Texas A&M Department of Surgery. Given the proven benefit in all-cause mortality seen among active individuals, how may we best change the trend away from diminished funding for dedicated recess or physical education programs, emphasizing exercise among children, especially in disadvantaged public school systems?
You can probably address this one better than me. I think this is a very important practical point. This seems to be going counter to the growing level of evidence that we have. So that's certainly not very productive to develop these measures, particularly when they are done on a grand scale, like a school district, like a whole county, like a whole state. Mm-hmm.
So one last question here. We had from Johnny here in the auditorium, said that he noted that some of your colleagues have been disputing whether it's sitting or actually just low activity. There's been a little bit of argument in the literature as whether it's actually sitting or just if we considered all the activity states, that's the deal. I think we don't want people to sit, but we want them to bring their activity levels up to kind of that moderate level.
Yeah, so this is a legitimate issue. But when you look at this study, if you look at the effect of sitting, controlling for activity, you still see an effect of sitting. And if you do a study on activity, controlling for the effect of sitting, you see an effect of activity. So I think the rest is semantic, because when you control for both concepts, you maintain an effect of the principal trait that you are trying to quantify. So I think we're beyond, I think, getting lost into the semantics here. The data have told us that both behaviors are real and important.
So one last question here while we have you. Since there's always so much discussion about whether it's nature or nurture, and you talked about that a little bit, in all these exercise behaviors, which is more important, the nature part or the environmental part?
This is also extremely complicated.
We only ask easy questions here.
And that's why I had asked you for another 15 minutes. You know, we all know people who are spontaneously active. They come from families where everybody is interested in exercise, and the parents are active, the offsprings are active, etc. But we also know about other family lines where it's just the opposite. And there appears to be a pretty large gap between the two. And all the studies that have been done in families and twins are telling that there is a real genetic component to being inclined to be physically active. I think we know this also in all of our exercise intervention study, the randomized controlled intervention when exercise is imposed on a group of people, you always have a large dropout rate. People who do not like exercise, once they can enter a program, they can do a few sessions, but they drop out. And they drop out probably because they don't like exercise. There may be other circumstances like a lack of time, like the necessity to drive long distances, etc. But the dropout rate is too high to because just by minor points. So I think the biology is catching with us when we try to alter the what is the fundamental predisposition of someone to be physically active. That's one of the biggest challenges in public health. Try to understand why these cases exist and to see whether we can find ways to reverse that.
Ways to fix it. Yeah. Please join me in thanking Dr. Bouchard.
Thank you.